On Tech News Today, Google wants to play doctor. Facebook thinks Native Americans aren't using their real names. And the White House creates a new cybersecurity team. Stick around. Tech News Today is next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, February 10th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. And by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use offer code TNT to receive $10 off at checkout. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Elgin. Our co-anchor today is After Nine's content czar, Joe Panettiere. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing fast. I'm doing fantastic, except that I'm flubbing my hello. How have you been?
I've been great. Welcome to the show, and also happy Safer Internet Day. Today is National or International Safer Internet Day. I don't know what that means. I think we all want a safer internet, I guess.
Well, it couldn't possibly get any unsafer, could it?
I don't think so. We were just talking before the show about what a great idea it would be to turn on all the microphones of everyone in the chat room. I don't think we have the technical capability to do that, but if we could, we wouldn't. Because why? Because it's Safer Internet Day, and we just wouldn't do that. All right, well, why don't we launch into the news? Qualcomm settled its antitrust issue with the Chinese government yesterday. The San Diego, California-based mobile chip giant agreed to pay $975 million in fines to the Chinese National Development and Reform Commission. They also agreed to give Chinese companies a better price on both chips and 3G and 4G technology licenses. Patrick Moorhead is an analyst for More Insights and Strategy, and he wrote an opinion piece for Forbes. Welcome to you, Patrick.
How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great, thank you. Now, can you briefly explain what Qualcomm was accused of by the Chinese antitrust authorities?
Sure. So in China in 2007, they passed some anti-competitive laws, and essentially Qualcomm was accused of violating these monopoly laws, specifically the price that they charged for essential patents that went into 3G and 4G modems. And essentially, the government came back and said, okay, you're guilty of these. You need to pay a fine. And then you also need to lower your price by around 35% on these essential patents. And these patents go to people like MediaTek, who would then sell that modem through to a Xiaomi or Lenovo.
So, Patrick, in your opinion, do you think Qualcomm was guilty here? Did they actually participate or lead monopolistic practices?
Well, no, you're doing good. Well, essentially, these new laws that were passed in 2007 are very, very difficult. I mean, 50 American companies that I was doing research on have been pulled up in front of this board. So they are some of the strictest definitions of being a monopoly. So according to that, they probably were, but according to pretty much every country around the world outside of China, they aren't restricted in what they can charge for these essential patents.
Now, it seems to me like this is a bit of a shakedown. I mean, I'm first of all curious about whether or not the Chinese government is holding Chinese companies to these same laws. And secondly, what is the settlement exactly? Can you give us more detail about what Qualcomm now has to do?
Sure. So let me address the settlement and what Qualcomm needs to do first. Then I'll go into some thoughts on what the Chinese government's doing here. So the first thing is they need to pay a $975 million fine, and that's right up front. The second thing they have to do is lower their prices on the essential patents on 3G and 4G and LTE. And what that means is where they normally got 3.5% to 5% of the price of the phone at 100% of the price of the phone, They now can only charge that based on 65% of the price of that phone. And really net for those essential patents, it's a 35% reduction. The other thing is, as it relates to contracts, is they have to be very careful in how they do contracts on the bundling of, let's say, their applications processor and a separate modem. And there are a lot of details, which essentially, though, nets out to this discount that they have to do. Let me talk about the government for a second. So there has been a tremendous amount of angst since 2007 over these anti-monopoly laws the Chinese government has brought out. And what it seems to be, since the Chinese economy has cooled off, is there's been a lot of discussion about shakedowns, or the thought of, okay, invest in the country, give a discount on essential patents and other type of patents, and everything can go well. And companies from Microsoft to Mercedes-Benz to BMW to SmithKline Glaxo, I mean, all of these companies have gone through the same thing. SKG actually had to pay a $114 million fine over what was called bribery. So given the fact that the same types of terms and conditions aren't being challenged by, let's say, the EU or even inside of the US, I could see where some could consider this a shakedown.
Hey, Patrick. Whether or not it's a shakedown, the thing that I find real interesting here is, you know, you're talking about a nearly $1 billion fine. You're talking about price cuts, et cetera. And yet Qualcomm stock is going up. Are investors viewing this as like sort of a slap on the wrist and or closure that will allow Qualcomm to now focus on its business and growth?
Yeah. So I'm an industry analyst, not one of these stock analysts, but what's clear is over the last year, there's been a little bit of a cloud hanging over the Qualcomm stock. When you think about all the potential growth that's going to happen in China and the uncertainty that was built into how is Qualcomm going to be successful in China, it held back the stock, made people really afraid to do a long-term investment. What you're seeing now is a complete erasure, or, you know, we've closed the chapter on this Qualcomm book in China, and we're off to the new chapter, which is really being able to compete head-to-head with people in China. Now, the interesting thing about this whole thing is that there were some phone makers in China who actually weren't paying royalties. And now with this ruling, they will actually be able to use the Chinese government to help them collect their royalty fees. The other reason why I think investors are happy about this is that this only applies to phones that are sold in China by Chinese companies. So if you're a Lenovo or a Xiaomi or an Oppo selling into China, this royalty structure has to be abided by. Now, if it's somebody who's actually, let's say, a Xiaomi or a Lenovo selling outside the country, let's say in India or even the US or even an Apple or Samsung selling into China, this isn't part of the deal. So investors saw this as a bracketed type of penalty.
So damage, but limited damage and a problem, but closure, and it's the end of the problem, essentially, once they pay the fine and agree to these contracts. Patrick Moorhead is at moreinsightsstrategy.com, and you can follow him on Twitter, Patrick Moorhead. Thank you so much for joining us, Patrick.
Thank you.
All right. Got some more news coming up, but first, let's talk about Gazelle, one of our sponsors today. Gazelle is an awesome company, and one of the reasons I love them is because I'm super lazy. That's true. I want to raise more money to buy the next new shiny new thing. And I can do that with Gazelle because I take the old thing from last year and I sell it to Gazelle. And the fact that it's so easy is the thing that makes it so appealing. You basically just let them know what the device is that you want to sell to them, indicate its condition. And then they send you a box. You just throw the box into the mail. And the box is really cool, too, by the way. It's a really nicely designed box that completely protects the devices with a minimal of packaging. It's not like, you know, one of these other boxes where you get, you know, you get a little thumb drive and it comes with, you know, 20 gallons of styrofoam peanuts. It's really elegant boxes for your devices. And you send it in, you get paid. And it's just a fantastically easy process. And if you want to buy a phone, now you can buy it from Gazelle directly. They have certified pre-owned devices, which are, of course, a great way to replace a device that, you know, something happened to it. If you love a device and you break it, you know, accidents happen, you can replace it with the same device, but you don't have to pay the extremely high price for a brand new device. If you get a certified like new device from Gazelle, that'll be a phone or a tablet that is indistinguishable from a brand new device. If you get a certified good phone or tablet, it will maybe have some scratches or scuffs, but that'll be a super great price. And so you always want to sell and buy via Gazelle. It's just a fantastic service. And again, everything about it is really, really easy. And you can just basically, if you do sell, you get paid in cash. And if you do buy from them, you'll get your shipment right away. And they have a 30-day risk-free return policy. So you have no risk whatsoever. Find out what your iPhone's worth. Take a minute and go to gazelle.com and find out. And we thank Gazelle for their support of Tech News Today. Google announced an improvement of search results when users search for health and medical information. Barry Schwartz is the publisher of Search Engine Roundtable and joins us now to talk about this. How you doing, Barry?
Yeah.
Now, in what way is Google improving these health-related search results exactly?
So they're providing, when you do a search for health or medical-related queries, they're providing a much richer experience to the search results using their knowledge graph information. Specifically, the research results will provide this much more illustrated version of the answers. So Google provided some screenshots of what it looks like. But basically, it's going to give you obviously a snippet about what the condition is, the various snippets that you potentially have, and also the treatments that are involved. Much like what they have currently, but it's going to be much more vetted out by actual Google doctors as well as a bunch of their partners like the Mayo Clinic.
Barry, when you say quote-unquote Google doctors, what do you mean by that? Are these people on staff? Are they consultants to the company? Any clues there?
So Google has a team of medical doctors, but this initiative is being led by a Google doctor employed by Google, I believe. His name is Dr. Kapil Parer. I can't pronounce his last name. I apologize. And he's basically leading the charge. I assume there's other people on his staff. I'm not sure how large the staff is. But they're working carefully to review, and Google says compile, curate, and review the information provided by their partners of other medical doctors, as well as knowledgeable sources on the internet and the Mayo Clinic.
Yeah, we have a doctor on staff too. It's Dr. Mom in the chat room. Now, how common are health-related searches? Is this some obscure type of search, or is this pretty common?
So Google tells us it's one in every 20 Google searches are related to health-related questions. So remember that time you told me, Mike, that you had that fungal problem with your foot, so I told you to go to Google to search for it.
Yeah, I remember that. I believe I said it was a friend.
Oh, sorry. No, I'm just joking. But basically, it's fairly common. I mean, even if you don't think you have a medical problem, you might think you... People search for medical conditions all the time, some more than others, and one out of 20 seems about accurate. It doesn't surprise me that it's one out of 20.
So, Barry, I have a clarification and a question. I was not the friend involved in that fungal incident with Mike. And my question actually has to get back to the wearable market and the mobile market. These search results and the types of information that Google is gathering and then displaying, will this tie back to Android Wear and other types of mobile technologies that Google's working on?
Right. So you're initially going to see this specifically within the Google mobile app, the Google mobile search results, as well as the PC results. You know, desktop Google search results. But clearly, like when you did a search on Google Glass, I don't know if you ever tested it out, Google would provide these knowledge graph snippets. If you have the Android Wear watch, Google will provide these snippets directly in the device. And this is what Google's showing for wearables. This knowledge graph is where the primary information for wearable searches or Google Now related queries are going to show up. So I could definitely see this, these types of information that you're seeing on the screen on a mobile device coming up on your, you know, wearables, be it Google Glass, which is now extinct, as well as, you know, Google Android Wear and other places.
Do you have any reason to believe that Google will add a disclaimer telling people they shouldn't self-diagnose? In other words, you know, make sure that people aren't using this instead of going to a real doctor. And also, when are these new results going to come online?
So I believe the disclaimer is there. currently towards the bottom. I'm obviously, we're not able to actually see it currently, but I believe it's at the bottom if you look at the anime GIF. That being said, it's just a snippet of information. They do obviously want you to go to a doctor. It's not enough to self-diagnose, although people have been cited as you consult a doctor, it says there. But people have been claimed and been news stories of self-diagnosing issues like cancer and stuff like that and going to the doctor to get medical help. And supposedly this is rolling out over the next few days in the U.S. For English-specific queries. And I think it covers about 400 different medical conditions with probably tons of different variations on how to search for those medical conditions.
I wonder if internet addiction is one of the afflictions covered. Barry Schwartz is at SEOroundtable.com, and you can follow him on Rusty Brick on Twitter. And you can also go to his website, rustybrick.com. Thanks for joining us, Barry.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Facebook has been accusing some Native Americans of using fake names and locking them out of the social network. Aura Bogato is a news editor and reporter for Color Lines, and she wrote a great piece on this story for the publication. Welcome to you, Aura.
Thanks so much for inviting me, Mike.
Glad you're here. Now, you started your article by talking about what a longtime Facebook user named Dana Lonehill went through. Can you tell us what happened to her?
So basically, she was questioned. Her name was questioned, and we don't really know why. Facebook has an authentic names policy in which they want people to use, you know, their quote-unquote real names, their authentic names. And for a lot of natives, people that have last names like Lone Hill, Lone Elk, Elk Looks Back, Chief Elk, Creeping Bear, names that, you know, a lot of people would probably guess are Native American names, get questioned. She was asked to submit, you know, a whole bunch of documentation. She did so. She was able to log back in briefly, and then she was asked for even more documentation. She was asked for, I believe, a credit card and a social security number, and she sort of at that point, she just didn't want to deal with it anymore. She wrote a piece on a blog called Last Real Indians. We then picked it up and published a longer piece along with comments from Facebook and some other anecdotal stories. And she got her account back that day. But this is something that sort of has been happening off and on for years. I've heard about it off and on for years. This is the first time I sort of pursued something about it. And it's a lot more prevalent, perhaps, than people think. I've had a lot of natives reach out to me, actually, in the last day and share unbelievable stories. Facebook, I think one could safely say that Facebook is sort of violating its own policy because it wants people to use their authentic names, yet has been going back in and changing people's names, sort of squishing two names together or dropping the first part of a last name and actually creating fake names that don't exist, that don't appear on people's birth certificates and documentation.
So, Aura, you hint here that you're actually stating that you're hearing from quite a few sources now. Can we expect a follow-up? Was this example sort of an isolated story that's been well documented, or do you expect more documentation to come forward now and the bigger story to emerge here?
I've talked to a lot of people at this point. I've talked to either by phone or text or Facebook Messenger. In fact, I've talked to, I would say, about a dozen people in the last, say, 24 hours. And I'm starting to sort of get a better picture of what might be happening. It seems like one person gets targeted and then suddenly all of their friends get targeted. And we also don't know who's doing this. I mean, we know that Facebook is doing this, but how is it being done? Is it, you know, there's this assumption that it's being done by an algorithm, but maybe it's somebody that's behind a screen. Maybe it's a group of Facebook employees who speak English but are in another country, like in Germany or in India, and they're perhaps kind of going through names and have a very little context for what a name like Vienna Elk Looks Back might mean in the United States. Meanwhile, you know, if you do a search on Facebook right now for Orange Crush, you know, I guarantee you the hundreds of people that come up and likely don't get questioned for using that name, I would say 99% of those people probably are not named Orange Crush, but Facebook doesn't seem to be going after them.
Well, and I think this gets to the core question that we're not quite addressing yet, which is that if a lot of these Native Americans who have names that are being questioned by Facebook were to use a fake name, like Bob Smith, they would never be asked to show additional documentation. And the implicit assumption here is that you're supposed to have a European name. And if you use your actual real Native American name, that's questioned. And the assumption there is you're not supposed to have a Native American name. So is Facebook's real names algorithm fundamentally racist? Have they, if this is algorithm based, have they built racism into their code?
I mean, that's a really good question. And I hope that Facebook really comes through and answers some more of my questions. They sent me a statement. The story is sort of being picked up by much bigger media now. And I know for the Telegraph, you know, the Telegraph got sort of the same exact blanket statement that I got. I was able to speak with somebody at Facebook, you know, off the record. He was helpful, but he couldn't really answer any of my questions. And now that I've spoken with more people, it does seem to be a bigger concern. I've spoken to two people in the last 2 days who have actually had their Facebook accounts shut down, despite the fact that, you know, they've handed over birth certificates and driver's licenses and et cetera. And then they come back with a name like Bob Smith. I'm not going to give you, you know, the exact names because they're like, well, I don't know if I want to talk to you because I don't want to have this account shut down. But, you know, I've talked to two people now who are actually using a fake name because it's an English language common sort of WASP name. And so they're assuming that they're not going to be targeted, and they haven't been.
Mm. Hey, Aura, what about this petition that's now circulating? It apparently demands that Facebook change its real names policy. Can you tell us a little bit more about that petition, where it stands, and what type of activity you're seeing around it?
Yeah, so we've seen that about 1,000 more people have signed it in the last day since the Color Line story, you know, came out. And, it, you know, it sort of asks these questions, says, you know, let people use their actual names on their profiles. We saw similar concerns come up from drag queens and the sort of queer community for people who have who are transitioning genders. And so they want, you know, their names to reflect their identity, people who perform in drag. And Facebook has addressed that and hasn't, you know, has sort of changed its policy apparently back and forth. But Chris Cox did address that very clearly. Chris Cox still hasn't addressed this issue. Nobody at Facebook has sort of come out with a statement and you know, responded to this petition in particular. And I think that some of what isn't being addressed too much, and I've been thinking more and more about, are the privacy concerns behind all of this. People have turned in, like I said, you know, birth certificates, marriage licenses, all kinds of documents, credit cards, social security numbers. And you have to remember that for a lot of natives, for example, that are on the res, they're not going to use, you know, a scanner and sort of have all this equipment. Mm. They have it all on their phone. So like what happens when they, you know, leave the res to visit a city and they lose their phone? That stuff is still all in their phone, and that wouldn't have been the case. They wouldn't have photographed it to begin with had Facebook not asked them. I was also told by the Facebook spokesperson that only one person looks at and verifies the documentation and immediately deletes it. You know, I wanted to believe him when he told me, but, you know, I know that for Dana Lone Hill, it took her a week to get her account back. So what happened with that stuff? Where was it? Did Facebook share it with anybody? Did they store it anywhere? Supposedly they get rid of it immediately, but I have a hard time believing that that's really the case.
Yeah, the whole thing just creeps me out. It's like, you know, basically it's the equivalent, it's the online equivalent of a bunch of uniformed officers identifying people who don't look like they belong and demanding to see their papers. It's just wrong. Now, can you tell us, Aura, what colorlines.com is? What is this publication?
So we're a publication where race matters, basically. We look at news through a racial lens. So whether that be tech or culture or immigration or media policy, what have you, we pay attention to any stories that, you know, intersect with race. Obviously, last year was a big year for us because of, you know, the sustained movement that we saw around Black Lives Matter. But, you know, that's our wheelhouse. That's the stuff that we really know. We're super small staff. You know, we're pretty dedicated to what we do.
Fantastic. Aura Bogado can be found at colorlines.com and on Twitter at Aura Bogado. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Mike.
All right. The White House announced today that it'll create a new division to defend the federal government against hackers. It'll be called the Cyber Threat Intelligence Integration Center, or CTIIC, or CTIIC, something like that. I guess it's initials, not an acronym. And the group will integrate intelligence from various agencies and communicate the risks and best protection practices to other federal divisions. The new unit will be housed in the Office of the Department of National Intelligence. The role is essentially being taken away from the Department of Homeland Security. And Joe, this signals a shift from the government's thinking. It's now a sort of intelligence matter. What do you think about this news? Is this a good idea, or is this just another example of moving around the deck chairs on the Titanic?
Yeah, you know, I'm nervous on a few fronts. The first thing that concerns me is to your point, that this area of quote-unquote expertise is moving from one silo to another when there shouldn't be any silos at all. What we really need is some sort of integrated approach that shares this intelligence across all government divisions. Hopefully this effort will achieve that. I'm skeptical. You know, the other thing that concerns me here is there's so much debate in terms of, okay, so if they discover threats, what's the response? I mean, there's actual public debate right now whether or not the government should be launching counter-strike cyber attacks against these foreign interests and or local interests. So it just seems like the government's always I don't even want to say a day late and a dollar short. It's a decade late and billions short.
Yeah, it's a great point. And, you know, I think the two biggest criticisms of this, of course, will be, first of all, that this new group exists to protect the government, not the Sony picture entertainment of the world,
right.
the targets that have been hit by all these hack attacks. So, you know, it's like if you're not in the government, you're on your own. Thanks a lot, government. And the other thing is that they're essentially moving this agency closer to the NSA. And a lot of people would say, well, the NSA is one of the biggest hackers and one of the biggest problems, the thing that makes us feel the least secure. Again, I'm just predicting that those will be two criticisms of this. Now, President Obama is going to meet with technology executives in Silicon Valley on Friday, and he's going to talk about this. This will be announced today, and he'll talk more about it on Friday. And he's expected also to call for more cooperation from tech companies.
Right. You know, not only the cooperation from tech companies, Mike, but we're also seeing a lot of cooperation among the Wall Street companies. Wall Street companies taking proactive steps to share information now as hacks are discovered, which is a great first step. But you'd like to see that across industry, not only in one industry.
Absolutely. Well, Facebook's internet.org announced a partnership with India's Reliance Communications to offer free online services in India through a special internet.org app. The Android app gives access to more than 30 web services, including features that help Indian users find jobs, healthcare, and education resources, and, you guessed it, Facebook. The service has already been rolled out in Zambia, Tanzania, Kenya, Ghana, and Colombia. The photo-sharing service favored by Redditors called Imgur now offers all users its pro version for free. It used to cost real money. They're calling it a birthday present to users on the service's 6th anniversary. In other words, they couldn't really monetize it that way. The change means that anyone can have unlimited photo uploads and storage, plus community features like commenting, voting, and sharing. The site will now be monetized through advertising exclusively. Google said today that it's going to phase out its Speedy, its own alternative to HTTP, in Google's Chrome browser by early 2016. Instead, the company will be supporting HTTP 2, which will arrive in Chrome this month. HTTP 2 is essentially based on Speedy, and its development is strongly influenced by Google. I think we could have seen this coming, Joe Panettiere. You know, Google's been so active in the development of HTTP 2 that, of course, they were going to support it at some point, I think.
Yeah, not only support it at some point, but it's basically a reimagination of how Google hopes to innovate, but also control a little bit. You know, you want to be open, but you also want to be able to drive the standard yourself.
That's right. That's a great point. In mergers and acquisitions, the Japanese camera maker Canon said today that they're going to buy the Swedish network video surveillance company Axis for $2.8 billion. Canon already sells surveillance cameras, but the Axis purchase transforms Canon into a major company in that industry. Hewlett-Packard will acquire the Silicon Valley-based mobile encryption company Voltage Security. The terms were not disclosed. You know, Joe, I think that there's a lot of this. You know, I think the biggest sort of meta story of the last couple of years is the degree to which these companies just buy whatever it is that they need, and they even buy stuff they don't need. A lot of billions thrown around. In this case, it's a much smaller acquisition. It's not in the billion-dollar range. But this is a perfect example of, you know, they need some little capability, so they buy a company.
You know what, Mike? Little capability, but huge trend. You know, last week we had the second biggest U.S. insurance company get or disclose a hack involving millions and millions of accounts and then disclose nothing was encrypted. And it seems like, I don't want to paint it as a magic bullet solution, but it seems like encryption seems to be the common denominator that everyone's talking about in terms of trying to protect information going forward. So Hewlett-Packard didn't disclose the value of this deal. It was probably only a few million. On the other hand, it could be a multi-billion dollar market opportunity overall. And you plug this piece into the Hewlett-Packard sales force, could be an interesting play.
Very much could be. In government crackdowns, Twitter said yesterday that the leading government in the world for content removal requests is Turkey. The Turkish government filed over five times more content removal requests to Twitter than any other country in the second half of 2014. Turkey filed 477 content removal requests between July and December, according to Twitter. The next two biggest requesters were Russia and Germany. China, of course, doesn't have to request content removals. They just block the whole site. That's the easy way. And oddly enough, Turkey blocked Twitter through some of that period, or at least at some point last year. Turkey, I mean, come on, Turkey. They're a NATO ally. They are, you know, they're trying to get in the European Union.
I don't know, Mike. I'm a little disappointed that we're not talking about the U.S. here. Are we getting slack in our requests? What's going on here?
I know. Pick it up, guys. Come on. You need to hire more people in that massive bloated bureaucracy and request Twitter to take stuff down. Oh, well. What are you going to do? Japan's SoftBank reported a third quarter operating profit drop of nearly 6%, which involved missing the estimate. The company was dragged down by Sprint, the money-losing U.S. mobile carrier that SoftBank bought an 80% stake in for more than $20 billion in 2012. The good and related news is that Root Metrics says that Sprint is no longer America's worst mobile carrier. Yay! They moved up a notch, and now T-Mobile is the worst. Well, in security news, security consultant Mark Burnett today posted 10 million passwords along with their corresponding usernames. The information was posted for other researchers to use. He says that they provide great insight into user behavior around security. Also provides great insight into user behavior by security analysts. Most of the usernames and passwords are now defunct, he said. Still, he accompanied the post with a long missive about why he shouldn't be arrested by the FBI for the posting. What do you think about this, Joe? Was this a good idea to post so many usernames and passwords?
I love the use of the word most. Most of the usernames and passwords are now defunct. So most could mean 5,000,001 are no longer active, yet 4,999,000 are still active, according to quick math logic there. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I thumbs down on this move, in my opinion.
It would have been a trivial exercise to run a process, to write some software that would be able to determine whether or not they're good, you know, valid, current, and all that stuff or not, and then eliminate the ones that are current, actively used, you know, logins.
You can bet hackers have done that since he's, you know, he may have not have proactively done that, but now the hacker community is absolutely going to do that.
Definitely. Oh, man. Well, in courtroom drama, IBM is suing Priceline. They're saying that the discount travel service violates four IBM patents. The patents are related to miscellaneous things like user conversation tracking, website performance boosting, internet advertising, and a single sign-on method. IBM is also suing travel website Kayak and restaurant reservation tool OpenTable over the same patents, two of which were developed for IBM's 90s-era Prodigy messaging service. That's right. This is Prodigy technology that they're suing over. Presumably, Priceline will bring William Shatner in to negotiate a settlement. Microsoft and Samsung have settled a contract dispute over patent royalties. The terms of the settlement were not disclosed. The disagreement arose when Samsung refused to make patent royalty payments to Microsoft after that company had acquired Nokia's handset business in September 2013. And Joe Panettiere, this is a story that reminds us that, of course, Microsoft makes a ton of money off of Android.
Makes a ton of money off Android, and I also think that it also signals the weakening power of Samsung, so to speak. You know, when a company is gaining more and more power, these settlements often don't arrive so quickly.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, and people in the news, Steve Horowitz has been named VP of Engineering at Snapchat. Horowitz previously worked as an engineering VP at Motorola and the CTO of Coupons.com. Also, we told you that President Obama is going to speak with tech executives in Silicon Valley on Friday. The event is the White House Summit on Cybersecurity and Consumer Protection at Stanford University, and Apple CEO Tim Cook will speak there as well. Last time a major an Apple CEO met with the president, it was Steve Jobs, and he got a peek at the new upcoming iPhone. This was before the iPhone actually was announced, I believe. Well, we've got some wrap-ups for you, but first, let's talk about LegalZoom. LegalZoom is one of our sponsors today, and this is not a law firm. It's a self-help legal services site that you can use to save yourself a ton of money, protect yourself, and get your life together. If you're starting a business, you can choose the type of business. You can do trademark searches. You can do business permits. You can even do the trademark registration at pennies on the dollar for what you'd have to pay to hire a lawyer. I basically, before I knew about LegalZoom, I did trademark a company name, and it cost a fortune. It took forever, and it was really a pain in the neck. With LegalZoom, it's super, super easy and incredibly affordable. They've been helping people for more than a decade. In fact, helped millions of people protect themselves and save lots of money. So get your life organized. Take control of your financial affairs and try LegalZoom.com. Don't let another year pass before you get your life organized. For legal help you can count on for your family or small business, go to LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TNT to get $10 off at checkout. Protect your family and protect your future at LegalZoom.com. And we thank LegalZoom for their support of Tech News Today. Our TNT fan of the day is Daniel Spithet, an application architect and Google Apps specialist in the Netherlands, who posted this picture on Twitter of the full moon photobombing his dashboard-mounted phone, which is, of course, playing the video of TNT. Now, he said something interesting. He listens to the video version because he says the audio on the video version is better than the audio on the audio version. I haven't checked that out. Interesting idea there. How do you watch or listen to TNT? Just record a video or take a picture of yourself and or your setup and post it on Google Plus, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we'll find it. You know, we don't get a lot of these on Facebook. We get a ton on Twitter and Google Plus. So if you're on Facebook, post one on Facebook. We've only had, like, I think in the history of this whole program in the last few months that we've been doing this, maybe, I don't know, less than 10 on Facebook. It's unbelievable. And, of course, hundreds on Google Plus and Twitter. You can subscribe to Tech News Today on Stitcher, and please leave a review and let us know how you like it. And also subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. Now, Joe Panettiere, thank you so much for co-anchoring today. Tell us what the heck is going on at your company.
After Nines is doing well. We've got a few surprises for later this year. But in terms of immediate developments, if you're interested in DevOps, Mike, or IT service assurance, then we've got a great conversation going on at a special time at Wednesday night at 9:01 p.m. Eastern. That's going to feature Moogsoft's CMO, Chief Marketing Officer, that is, Rob Markovich. Again, he'll be discussing the stages of DevOps as well as IT service assurance. And you can find that over at afternines.com/CEO.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Joe Panettiere. I don't even know who that is.
I think we're even now with the mispronunciation.
Forget the real names. Forget real names. I'm against the real names policies. We don't have one here. All right, Joe Panettiere. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week.
Take care, Mike.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay, you can watch us live every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC at live.twit.tv or on the app or browser plugin of your choice. If you're ever in the San Francisco Bay Area, come on up and watch us live. You can follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV and come hang out with us in our Google Plus community. Just search Google Plus for Tech News Today and you will find it. And you can follow me on Twitter. Mike Elgin is my Twitter name. And please send us your thoughts and opinions. Send email to tnt@twit.tv or call 260-TNT-SHOW. And don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight right here on live.twit.tv. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.